two, please. Michael Wozniak versus Joseph Phoebus. Pritchard, oh, I'm sorry. Mark Pritchard, pardon me, versus Healthcare Service. Thank you. How the hell did they get this card mixed up?
They have six on top of it.
May it please the court, Davis, Mike Wozniak on behalf of Healthcare Service Corporation.
Thank you. All right, proceed.
With respect to this case, Your Honor, it is the contention of Healthcare Service Corporation that regardless of the standard of review utilized, the district court determination is erroneous. Whether one uses the arbitrary and capricious standard or the de novo standard of review, we feel that there was error at both levels. It's our first contention that the district court should have utilized the arbitrary and capricious standard because of the plan language in this case, where the language of the plan clearly indicates that the plan administrator will make its own review as to the determination of medical necessity, regardless of what the treating physician does, and then further indicates that it will use its reasonable judgment in deciding that matter, and then further has discretion on who is paid and what is paid, there can be no inference from a normal participant or beneficiary in this plan that if they submit a bill, it would be automatically paid, which I think is the contention of the plaintiff in this case. And that being so, if there's no automatic inference that the bill will be paid if submitted, then we go back and look at the language, and it clearly indicates that there's going to be a universal review of any bills that are submitted. The plan administrator has to take a look at, is there a medical condition, what was the treatment provided, and then it makes its own determination as to medical necessity.
So is this different from the sort of language involved in Hertzberger against Standard Insurance?
With respect to the Hertzberger case, there were two underlying cases, the Johnson and Hertzberger cases. One, and I think it's clearly distinguishable because in those cases, the issue was what were the duties of the plan administrator? And it was here, there's clearly language to the effect that if you submit a bill or if there's going to be a determination made with respect to the plan, in this case, the plan language says we are going to review medical necessity from the start. And in Hertzberger and in the Johnson cases, it was clear that there was no indication that any discretion was going to be used. If it's proof sufficient to us or proof satisfactory to us.
Exactly. That was the point, that it had to be proof sufficient to us. Well, it was perfectly clear the plan was going to make an independent judgment. And Hertzberger held that that was not enough to justify use of the abuse of discretion standard.
With respect to the Hertzberger, the language was total disability exists when the plan administrator determines all these conditions are met. And then the court indicated that the list that followed such language was made up entirely of objective elements. That would point out to me, Your Honor, that there were two things here. One is that the court looked at the entire language of the contract. And I think in this case here, you have to, as this court said in Hertzberger, it's a contract that we're reviewing. And the district court was wrong in its interpretation of Hertzberger. First of all, it said, the district court indicated that in its opinion on March the 20th of 2001, that the safe harbor language, if it wasn't used, then it was a de novo review. On page 7, I think it was, if and only if the safe harbor language isn't used, then you have to use de novo review. That was erroneous. And so I think there was a misunderstanding. And I think in the Hertzberger cases, we clearly have an indication here. There's no way that you can construe this as a ministerial task. And I think if you look at it from the perspective of the court in Herzberger said, look, they have this discretion that they're going to make this determination, but it's all a checklist. Do they have this? Do the dates of service fall within given dates of time or whatever the situation is? And it's a checklist. In this case, there's no language limiting what the plan administrator is going to do. In this case, they tell you, regardless of what your physician does, regardless of what the treating physician says, we're going to do our own determination of medical necessity. And we will determine whether things are exempted under the terms and provisions of the plan and how this plan is going to be construed. And I don't, and it would be our contention that this provides discretion. I think the recently cited Fay case from the Second Circuit would also indicate it specifically held that medical necessity language conferred discretion with respect to whether or not a claim would be covered under the terms of the plan. And I think that case was instructive. Again, that court said the plan administrator making a medical necessity determination is, in fact, a discretionary decision. And then the court in the Fay case further went on and went through the plan language and decided what did the plan mean in its entirety from the contract. And I think that's another place where the court erred below. And in that regard, the situation is the court did not limit itself to the administrative record, and in fact, the court below rejected the language of the plan itself and substituted the language of the Illinois statute, which makes the...
In what respect did it reject the language of the plan?
Your Honor, with respect to its de novo review, the court indicated that because of the application of the Illinois Nurse Practitioners Act, that the court felt that specific care had to be rendered by registered nurses.
Yes.
And
in what respect did it reject the language of the plan? Had the plan purported to say that care that would ordinarily under state law be rendered by physicians will under our plan be rendered by veterinarians or anything like that?
No. And in fact,
So then I don't understand your claim that the district court rejected the language of the plan.
It specifically substituted language. As I stated in footnote 3 of the reply brief, Your Honor, there was a situation when the custodial nature of what is custodial care, the court said what's custodial care under the plan is irrelevant because what's custodial for some people is life-threatening for Lucas Fritcher. So he rejected, in fact, he says, what you define as custodial, I don't care, because what's custodial for Lucas Fritcher is something different. It's life-threatening. And in that vein, he totally rejected what the plan definitions were.
What was the basis for the health care decision to approve the 12 hours of nursing care per day after this lawsuit was commenced?
That is outside the record, but it was an attempt to compromise the issue. This case went from, instead of, on 568 of the record, Your Honor, Dr. Kusick indicated what normally happens in these cases is there is a weaning down and a paring down of care so that the skilled care is given at specific times, and it's a case management situation. That was rejected here. We went from a reconsideration to litigation, and that's how we ended up here today. I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
All right, counsel.
May it please the court, Joseph Thebus of Urbana, here on behalf of the plaintiffs, appellees. The defendant has continually, throughout this case, played a shell game with the trial court, with the plaintiff, and continues in argumentative fashion with your honors. This case is clearly not distinguishable from the Herzberger case. If anything, de novo review is even stronger in this case because after saying that they will make a determination, which your honors correctly said what that means.
Doesn't that depend on context? Suppose this were a claim for one particular kind of surgery that, the plan beneficiary shows up and says, I want surgeon X to perform procedure Y, and the plan says, there are 5 alternative forms of surgery. You've selected the most expensive. We don't think that's medically necessary. We think a less expensive form of surgery will do fine. And there's a petition for review. What standard of review do you think would be appropriate?
It is the standard is what is provided under that policy. Does
it looks like there's discretion to determine what is medically necessary. So if the plan said, look, we authorize surgical procedure number 5, we don't think number 1 is medically necessary in a world that contains number 5, it'd be very hard to see how there would be de novo review. Now, well, maybe your position is that everybody agrees that at least 2 hours a day of skilled services are medically necessary for Lucas. And the problem is they can't be those 2 hours of services can't be performed by one person in 2 hours. They're just spread out.
That is factually the case and a position we
but
have
on
about
that
day one. But that
on that understanding, we don't actually have a question about what is medically necessary. Right? Everybody agrees that 2 hours of skilled services are medically necessary. It's just a question about whether they can be performed in 2 hours.
And I would suggest, Your Honor, that there's no genuine dispute but what they cannot be performed within 2 hours. They are things that happen at random intervals around the clock. The decision has to be made as to medications. We have the defendant says, well, there's an emergency situation, and under the statute, you don't have to be a nurse in an emergency situation. But every day, at odd hours, it's an emergency situation. But what I was...
I'd rather suggest that there's no emergency.
Well, it isn't an... life is an emergency. To say it was...
No. Come on. We've got to use the language in some sensible means.
Well,
you cannot have a world in which every living moment is an emergency, because then the word emergency has lost any punch.
The point I was trying to
make... been drained of meaning.
The defendant tries to circumvent the statute by saying... because in an emergency situation, a non-licensed person can render this care, that would allow, under any situation, a non-licensed person to render the care, and that's not so. But in our case, Your Honor, after saying determines, which is, they then go on to say, which is just to say they make a decision, they determine it. Then what do they say about this determination? Three times in the following paragraph, they say reasonable judgment. I suggest, Your Honor, that reasonable is an objective test. If reasonable certainly does not tell the plan member that this will not be de novo review, that there will be substantial deference, that for all practical purposes there will be no review. I suggest, Your Honor, that when you look at the language of the plan, not only is there nothing that supports a contention that there was a safe harbor, but the language, by use of the term reasonable three times, reveals that it's an objective test, Your Honors. They referred to the Fay case here in a filing the other day. Fay case did not use reasonable, the term reasonable. The Fay case did not distinguish or discuss Herzberger or Postuma case from this court, and is clearly distinguishable and clearly would be in conflict with those cases, I suggest, and it does not cite any authority for saying just the word determine is all that's necessary. But in fact, in that case, they went on to set forth, here's the five or four factors you must consider. In our case, they went on to say, reasonable judgment, Your Honor. I suggest that there is no rational basis to contend that there must be only arbitrary and capricious review. To the contrary, the review must be de novo. The trial court correctly realized that. The trial court followed Herzberger, and rightly so, and this case should be affirmed.
Can you speak to the attorney's fee question?
In what respect, John?
Well, you know, how is that justified when the fee was $250 per hour in the same geographic region where the average was $125.
Well, Your Honor, we don't practice law. I don't just practice law in Central Illinois. I've just finished being involved in a case in New Jersey, had a case in Wisconsin. I've had cases throughout the country. And using just hours, and I would say most of the attorneys I litigate against, be it Kirkland and here or New York firms and professional firms, the rates are far, far higher than $125 an hour, and I could not compete against them if my office was not organized and equipped to and spend the cost to do so. Now, second, hours is only half of the formulation. Result is the other part of the formulation, and both are just part of the factors that are spelled out in the rules of professional conduct concerning the reasonable fee. For example, today we have two attorneys from the defendants here, and I have myself. I'd like to see what the total bill that was rendered to Blue Cross in this litigation. I'll wager, I've not seen it, but they say, well, our hours are less. Well, I'm not counting their hours, but I'll bet their bill is equivalent to mine.
And none of that was before the district court, right? Their bill was not before the district court. When the district court determines.
Correct, that's true. It should be. And I urged that. I said, well, you know, what is their bill? I think just to say that one law firm charges this rate and another law firm charges this another rate is totally irrelevant. I do not think in Central Illinois, as a matter of fact, well, I do not think that my fee rate claimed is unusual in the slightest for someone doing this type of work and doing the class action work, personal injury work, things like that that I do on a nationwide basis. Your Honor, I hope that answers your question.
All right.
If no further questions, I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to follow up. Mr. Phoebus urged this court to look at the words of reasonable judgment, and it would be our contention again, Your Honor, that the proper analysis in an ERISA case is to read the entire plan and to discern from the entire language of the plan whether or not this is a situation where one can discern whether or not there will be discretion used by the plan administrator. Moreover, I'd also like to draw upon the situation of ERISA and plan administrators in a fiduciary capacity. In this case, Mr. Phoebus' own witness, Dr. Bandy, the treating physician, acknowledged in page 444 of the record that some of this care is custodial care. He further acknowledged that unlicensed persons could be trained to provide that care on page 458 of the record. And he further indicated that if Lucas Fritcher was in a long-term facility, an RN would not be by his side 24 hours a day on page 460. Now, with those admissions, Your Honor, I think it would be prudent for a plan administrator to call upon a determination of as to how they are expending plan funds. If they are sympathetic or empathetic to one party or one beneficiary or participant, then they must do so for all. And then it's a situation where they're in violation of their fiduciary duties. The plan administrator has obligations to the plan and all beneficiaries and participants, not just to the sympathetic situation of Lucas Fritcher. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case.